There are times when questions of faith spontaneously arise. Imagine an anxious patient with a troubling symptom hearing the doctor say, "You have cancer," and her world will never be the same again. Imagine a tired parent sitting by the bed of a child with a serious illness or a crippling birth defect who wonders why this beautiful little being has received this curse, a curse that may limit their ability to enjoy a full life. Imagine an alcoholic stops by the liquor store noticing a sale on their favorite vodka. A gambler hears someone winning a jackpot. Or a porn addict sees the image of an attractive woman appear on the screen and feels the urge to visit a XXX website. They feel the compulsion come up, and they wonder if their faith in a higher power will satisfy them enough to turn away from their addictive behavior for one more day. These are the moments of vulnerability that come with being human, that come with the awareness of our mortality. As citizens of a free society, we have a lot of choice about how we live, how we face adversity, and make meaning in our lives in the face of death. And when we come face to face with death, we are often the most vulnerable. Clergy know this, and sometimes take advantage of that vulnerability. How many of you have been to a funeral or a memorial service and heard the eulogy end with a call to come to Jesus as your personal Savior? With a gleam in his eye, the preacher will exhort you, saying, "It's not too late to save yourself from eternal damnation because of the disease of original sin. That venereal disease your mother and father infected you with at conception." Many of us here would take major offense at such a suggestion in that setting. And many of us would also have our skeptic engaged. After all, where is this hell anyway? Not in some underworld lair yet to be discovered, I don't think. I don't think I've heard of any news reports of angels outside the windows of jet airplanes as they're flying through the clouds. And what about these eternal soul that might be suffering in hell for eternity? Just where does that reside in our body? Like a little homunculus at the controls of our brain. But who knows? Maybe the fundamentalist Christians are right, and we will suffer eternally without taking Jesus as our personal Savior. The stakes are pretty high, after all, if eternal torment might be our fate. Pascal wagered that your best bet was converting, whether you believe or not, because the eternal benefit after death trumped any temporary intellectual discomfort in this lifetime. And sad to say, science can't help us out, sort this out either. It can only generate answers through empirical experiments, and eternity can't, unfortunately, be measured or quantified. Physics, mathematics, philosophy depend on human consciousness for their creation and application, but cannot transcend them. The nature of what exists, what is true, is far greater than what our minds can imagine. So we're stuck with this vulnerability that cannot be removed. There are vitally important choices we must make in our lives with incomplete information to make those choices. We've got to put our trust in that which cannot be proved absolutely. In the religious world that promises answers to life's most persistent questions, those answers usually come via three sources: a prophet, a revelation to the prophet, and a community that perpetuates the memory of the prophet and the prophet's teachings. The presumption is the prophets are somehow more connected to truth than we are. They are either selected by God to receive direct transmission of truth, as Moses was on Mount Sinai, or Muhammad was when he was praying in a mountaintop cave in the vicinity of Mecca, or they are actually the incarnation of God, as Jesus' followers claimed. The prophet's revelation is special because it points to the absolute truth that we don't have access to, that has been revealed to the prophet. Once prophets die, and possibly come back to life in Jesus' case, the community that gathered around them organized the transmission of their memory and their message. Without the prophet, there would and could be no revelation. Without the community of devoted followers, there would be no preservation and transmission of that revelation. These prophets have promised that by believing their revelation and following the practices that they or their communities have defined, that vulnerability that life can thrust upon us, deeply embedded in the human condition, can be resolved. Many have happily said yes and accepted this offer of eternal security and reward. Others have grown up in these traditions, have never questioned them, taking the assurance of salvation just for granted. Now for the bad news. Unfortunately, all three of these sources of faith can be betrayed. None of them turn out to be absolutely reliable. The revelation that comes to a prophet is relevant to a specific time and place in the context of a culture and a language. The meaning of that revelation erodes. The greater the distance from the place, the longer the time afterward, and without knowledge of the cultural context. It erodes further without knowing the individual personalities involved in the stories and the poetry and the metaphor of the original language. We know a little of the problem when we might share a story with a friend, and then that friend shares it with another, and then it gets shared until it finally comes back to us in a hardly recognizable state. Oral tradition is notorious for the additions, embellishments, and corrections. Even when revelations were written down immediately, errors crept into the ancient copying process that affected the meanings. Reminds me of one particularly troubling scriptural reference that directed monks that they should be celibate. What the text actually said before the copying error is that they should celebrate life rather than live a celibate life. Revelation is also frozen in the science and technology of the day. Scientific advances have pretty much invalidated the literal version of the creation story found in Genesis. And we don't need to go forth and multiply any more. That's now one of the sources of most of the world's problems. The ancient prophets didn't know the biology of how babies were made. We know that men are not planting their seeds in the fertile womb of a woman. First century agriculture turns out to be a poor metaphor for how reproduction works. And it isn't a good model for anchoring the roles of women and understanding human sexuality and who should get married to whom. Nor is it a good civic model for a democratic egalitarian society because it assumes kingship and slavery. What about the prophets themselves? The sources of these revelations? Were they completely perfect and reliable? Moses didn't want the job of leading his people out of Egypt. Jesus didn't have much time on earth. And we have precious little of what probably came from his mouth. And Muhammad had his problems too, but I don't want to talk about them publicly. At the risk of being accused of defaming the prophet, blessed be his name, and getting a fatwa against me. The most serious betrayals come from those who speak in the prophet's name and defame them by abusing their words as a way to gain influence and power for themselves. I doubt I need spend a lot of energy persuading you of that possibility. I think I need only mention names like Jimmy Swaggart and Jerry Falwell and rest my case. And that example actually also highlights flaws with religious communities, the institutions that arose to preserve the memory of the prophet and perpetuate the teachings. Once created, institutions take on a life of their own that is independent of the creators, a life that wants to perpetuate itself. The Catholic Church has been exposed for the cover-up of sexual abuse by priests. But lest we think that that's just a Catholic problem, sexual abuse is hardly a stranger to other religious organizations. And I know how hard we at the Unitarian Universalist Association work to root out and eliminate such abuse. But yet, I'm sad to say, it still happens. Well, there's a lot more I could say about how religious organizations and institutions fail to live up to their aspirations and high ideals, and I'm sure if you have been wounded by seeing your church teach one thing and clergy and or congregants do another, you have your stories to tell too. I know I've heard many of them over the years from those who have come to our doors seeking refuge. In the process of all this betrayal, people's faith can be broken. Many of us come to Unitarian Universalist congregations wounded, wondering if this will be a safe place for their hearts as they seek truth and meaning for themselves. And others bitterly reject religion as a way to find meaning and truth, turning to popular culture as their solution. And I don't think that that's maybe the best choice. I'll assert today, relying on your common sense, understanding that materialism falls far short as a substitute path seeking truth and meaning. It fails both individually and collectively, particularly as we chew up our planet to satisfy our lust for stuff. Materialism fails to answer the heartache of the parent at the bedside of a crippled child. It fails to satisfy the terminally ill patient. It fails most profoundly the substance abuser. Thankfully, there is another way. This way looks for provisional answers inwardly. It asserts that if God exists, the God found outside us will also be the God found within us, and there will be found a unified whole between them. It tests and compares the answers that come from outside us with and against our own personal experience and understanding, independent of the existence or non-existence of God. This way allows each individual to retain the authority to judge what is good and bad, healthy or unhealthy, and what is wholesome or unwholesome. This way says, relying on our inner capacity for discernment is best. It may not always be the best way, but it is ultimately better than giving our faith into the hands of another. This way is supported by a community of free seekers who band together for their mutual growth and development. This way is the way of Unitarian Universalism. Our source of inner authority comes from acknowledging the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Because each of us is unique, the expression of that worth and dignity will likely differ from one person to another. No tree will look exactly like another tree, depending on where it is planted and how it grows. No nest will replicate exactly another nest. Each will still display the truth of their nature as we reveal our inherent worth and dignity in different ways. We need not think alike, feel alike, experience alike, to love alike, respect alike, and learn alike. We have an open source faith that embraces diversity at its core. Toward that end, in our tradition, the prophetic power of the minister is limited. The compelling power of the congregation is limited. The role of minister and congregation is to support and inspire individual growth and development toward higher truth and deeper meaning. And both minister and congregation also have the role of challenging individual conclusions, appreciating that we are all capable of error, of self-deception, of succumbing to the impulses of greed, hatred, and delusion. Finally, we organize our congregation democratically. We make agreements together about what we value and how we will be together. We celebrate and follow our shared values rather than our shared beliefs. The result is a religious tradition with limited institutional power and authority, limited ministerial power and authority, and openness to both ancient and modern sources of truth and meaning that radically respects individual autonomy. It makes no promise to escape feelings of vulnerability, but it does make a few promises. Our congregation promises to welcome everyone. Our congregation promises to be a place we freely seek truth and deeper meaning. Promises to pursue justice. Promises to cultivate compassion. Promises to cultivate love for the world. The result of these promises is a limit to the risk of betrayal of faith, but not its elimination. Unitarian Universalism has a very good method for balancing risk and reward for communal religious life. It works for me. It works for almost 400 of us who are members of this congregation. And I think it might work for those of you who are considering whether this could be your religious home as well. So be it. And Matt's got a much more uptone Randy Newman song to show you that Randy's got different ways that he's can do this. But as we pause, let us join in the support of this congregation. It is a free process. Your contributions are not compelled. Your generosity is greatly appreciated.
So the song I did earlier was God's song, and that was kind of a dispirited view of somebody's perception and frustration with God. And this one is, I think, probably a little more healthy perception for somebody who's a believer.
He gives us all his love. He gives us all his love. He's smiling down on us from up above, and he's given us all his love. He knows how hard we're trying. He hears the babies crying. He sees the old folks dying. He's given us all his love. Now if you need someone to lean on, you can always talk to him. And if you need someone to lean on, you can lean on him. He gives us all his love. He gives us all his love. He's shining down on us from up above. He's giving us all his love. He's smiling down on us from up above, he's given us all his love.
Because these gifts are not compelled, because they are freely given, they are so much more valuable and precious. And let us give great thanks for what we have given to each other. Thank you. And let us sing our last hymn, which is We Would Be One, which is 318. Let us read the words to extinguish the flame. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community. Clive Barker says it well. Any fool can be happy. It takes someone with real heart to make beauty out of the stuff that makes us weep. May we have the courage to be vulnerable, to open our hearts, even at the risk they might be broken, to find the beauty of the human spirit that will bring us tears of joy. Go in peace. Make peace. Be at peace.